Hello, this is Tom Scott, Ford County Chronicle for Wednesday, July 29th, 2026. We begin on the front page, story from the Paxton Buckley Lotus School Board, players, parents, go to bat for baseball coach. Policy of PBL superintendent restricts administrators from coaching, Niebuhr included. Paxton. Calls from the community to keep Brock Niebuhr as Paxton Buckley Lota High School's head baseball coach grew a little louder during the PBL School Board's monthly meeting on Wednesday, July 22nd, as more people, including some of his players, spoke out in a crowded room full of supporters. High school baseball players Jackson Humes and Grant Marshall, flanked by several of their teammates, joined parents Brian Cole, Donnie Inman, and Craig Keefe in asking that a new policy proposed by new superintendent Eric Bohm be reversed to allow Niebuhr, the high school's assistant principal, to continue to also serve as head varsity baseball coach next spring. In the event that the new policy prohibiting administrators from also serving as coaches is not changed, they asked that Niebuhr be grandfathered in, as suggested a month earlier by volunteer assistant coach Pat Prina. "I feel PBL has got enough black eyes and bad publicity," Cole told the board. "Don't make this another one. It's not broke, so don't try to fix it, please." Cole told the five board members present, Don Bachtold, Grant Kleinsteiber, Brittany Balding, Josh Mullins, and Jason Rust, that Niebuhr had been an exceptional coach and role model for his players throughout his career, sacrificing much of his family time to do the best job he can. Cole said Niebuhr has successfully done so too, despite also having previously served as the high school's athletic director at the same time. With Niebuhr's track record, Cole said he is confident that he could handle being both an assistant principal and coach. "Brock has proven that he's a high performer and can handle multiple duties," Cole said. "I feel that in the rare event that there would be a conflict for him not performing one of his duties, there's obviously a backup plan in place, just like if you would be sick." According to Cole, Niebuhr is very organized, extremely professional, and a person the kids respect. "He's everywhere," Cole said. "He's invested in the community. He lives in the community. I was at I don't know how many graduation parties this summer, and Brock was at every damn one of them. And he's writing letters of recommendation, hauling dirt to the football field when Central Catholic didn't want to play us because of some holes in the turf, rimming water off the baseball field to try to get a game in because there was too much rain. He supports other coaches and staff. I'm positive he has sacrificed a ton of family time." Cole asked that the board consider the potential, if not likely, consequences of not allowing Niebuhr to continue coaching. "Have any of you thought what Brock might do if he's not allowed to coach?" Cole asked the board. "I know where I'd put my money. Have you thought about the assistants, volunteers? What would they do if Brock wasn't allowed to coach? How would the community react?" Cole asked that the board instead allow Niebuhr to coach next spring to allow him to prove that he can do it. "Niebuhr cares about his players and wants to continue to coach them," Cole said. At a recent awards night for baseball, when the awards part was over, Brock thanked his coaches, his players, and his family, Cole told the board. His voice was shaky. His eyes were red. There were tears running down his cheek. "It was definitely quiet. It feels to me like we are punishing him for doing a great job." Addressing the board for a second consecutive meeting, Inman said he understands that the superintendent has the right to establish expectations and new policies, and also understands the desire to make sure that the administration are available to fulfill their responsibilities during the school day. However, Inman said, "This decision isn't just about a coaching position. It's about keeping the right person in the right place." "For these guys," Inman said, pointing to the several high school baseball players seated around him, Coach Niebuhr has dedicated so much time to PBL, to sports, to school, Inman continued. He's been athletic director, assistant principal, varsity head coach for baseball, and so many other things. Throughout that time, he has earned the respect of the students, parents, teachers, and fellow administration, and most definitely the players. Leadership is more than just wins and losses. He's taught accountability, discipline, character, and what it takes to represent the school and community with pride. Inman said he was concerned that if Niebuhr were not to be the coach, it might be difficult for the school district to find another, especially one as qualified and committed. Inman noted that there are currently numerous unfilled coaching positions at PBL. These kids, our school, deserve someone who knows the program, understands expectations, builds relationships with families, and earns the trust of the community. And I believe Coach Niebuhr is that person, Inman said. This isn't about resisting change. It's about recognizing when an exception makes sense, because someone has consistently proven they're the best person for the job. The board's responsibility is to do what's best for the students, for the athletes. And I believe keeping Coach Niebuhr as varsity head coach is what is best for these students, our baseball program, and our community. Great coaches are hard to find. Great leaders are even harder to find. We already have one. Please don't let him walk away because of a policy that doesn't reflect the unique values of PBL. Hume said Niebuhr has made a real difference in the lives of his players. He treats everyone with respect, pushes us to be better athletes and be better people, and genuinely cares about us on and off the field, Hume said. I've also talked to a lot of my teammates, and they feel the same way. It's not just parents who see the positive impact that he has made, as we do too. We're already missing so many coaching positions as listed, and losing another coach would truly hurt us and would make things harder for our team and our athletic program. I hope the board will consider the voices of the students and work to fix the issue instead of losing someone who has so much positive impact on many of us. Marshall, an incoming senior, also spoke favorably of Niebuhr. He's been a great coach since day one when I met him, Marshall said. He's been really nice to me and all my teammates. He's done above and beyond. And I could tell you he's more Mr. Niebuhr than Coach Niebuhr. He was always reminding us, school comes first. He was always stressing about our grades. I feel like Coach Niebuhr's really coached us into being better men in life, not just baseball players and students. I would like you guys to please reconsider the option of removing him as a coach. Speaking last was Keith, whose son Gavin is an incoming senior. Does the perceived benefit of this restriction or change to policy truly outweigh the cost that would come with it as far as how it impacts our kids and the community? Keith asked the board. Although I don't understand everything involved, it seems like an extreme risk to take that might cause Niebuhr to look for work elsewhere. Keith called Pima's early suggestion of grandfathering Niebuhr a practical approach to resolving the situation. Prino was my coach coming through high school, and he had a lasting impact on my entire life, to me as an athlete and to me as a person, Keith told the board. And that's the impact that Niebuhr is now having on these kids right now. Keith asked Bachtold, the board's president, to explain the reason for the new policy. It falls under superintendent discretion, Bachtold replied. Baum made no further public comments. Last week, we had the last of the Muser case. This week, the last of the Jenna Lee Vogel case. Ex-pharmacist gets 90-day jail term probation for drug cash. Thousands of pills found in her Gibson City home. Paxton. Moments before she was sentenced to 90 days in the Ford County Jail and 30 months of probation, Former Paxton pharmacist Jenna Vogel apologized for having stockpiled thousands of prescription pills in her Gibson City home, telling Judge Matt Fitton that she recognizes the potential harm of doing so. The regret that Vogel expressed near the end of Monday's two-hour sentencing hearing in Ford County Circuit Court contrasted with State's Attorney Andrew Killian's characterization of Vogel as a defendant who has yet to accept responsibility for her criminal actions. According to Killian, judging by Vogel's own statements contained within both a pre-sentence investigation report and a psychological evaluation filed ahead of her sentencing, her attitude has been, "It's not my fault. Someone else is to blame. I had no choice. Someone else should pay the price for this." Her attitude is, "She's not responsible." While Killian argued for a prison term of 3 years and 9 months, plus a $2,500 fine, defense attorney James Martinicus of Champaign asked for a term of probation for the 36-year-old Vogel, the one-time owner and head pharmacist of the since-shuttered Doug's Compounding Pharmacy, who pleaded guilty in April to one Class 3 felony count of possession with intent to deliver a controlled substance. Fitton, though, ultimately settled on a 90-day jail term and 30-month probation term, along with a $5,000 fine. As a condition of her probation, Vogel was ordered to complete a cognitive thinking class and mental health and substance abuse evaluations, and refrain from using alcohol or any drugs for which she does not possess a prescription. Vogel was taken into custody immediately and escorted to jail to serve her jail term. She was given credit for 1 day already served when she was booked in jail upon her initial court appearance last year. Vogel was charged in February 2025 with two counts, one a Class 3 felony and one a Class X felony, of possession with intent to deliver a controlled substance. The Class 3 felony alleged that Vogel knowingly possessed with the intent to deliver an amount of amphetamine on March 10, 2023, while the Class X felony, which Killian agreed to dismiss in April as part of a negotiated plea agreement, alleged that Vogel knowingly possessed with the intent to deliver 100 grams or more of a substance containing hydrocodone on that date. Under Truth in Sentencing guidelines, Vogel had faced a sentence ranging from up to 30 months of probation to anywhere from 2 to 5 years in prison for the Class 3 felony charges. Arguing for a 3-year, 9-month prison term, Killian noted, among other factors in aggravation, that Vogel abused her position of trust and authority as a pharmacist to acquire a cache of amphetamine pills that numbered in the tens of thousands, according to a complaint that led to the suspension of her registered pharmacist license by the Illinois Department of Financial and Professional Regulation. 43,893 controlled substances were removed from the Vogel home on March 10, 2023, by investigators for the Federal Drug Enforcement Administration. "We're talking about a systematic plan and conduct over the course of years," Killian said. Ironically, Killian said, Vogel was placed in a position of trust to prevent the spread of controlled substances improperly in our community. Killian said a probation sentence would only deprecate the seriousness of the crime and not serve the means of justice. Killian said a prison term would be necessary to deter others from committing similar crimes. While Killian acknowledged Vogel's lack of any criminal history, he also noted her apparent lack of acceptance of responsibility. In both the presence of investigation of the in the pre-sentence investigation report from the Ford County's Pretrial Services Office and the psychological evaluation from Dr. Judy Osgood, Vogel never explained how she came to possess thousands of amphetamine pills in the home that she shared with her then-husband and 3 young children. Instead of admitting that she took amphetamine from her own pharmacy, She only explained how she came to possess the hydrocodone, for which she is no longer charged, Killian said. If the amphetamine was part of the same scheme, by taking it from her former employer, Scott's Pharmacy in Gibson City, we don't know, Killian told Vinton. Killian said Vogel's explanation for having the hydrocodone in her home was the largely self-serving and uncorroborated claim that her ex-husband, who allegedly was physically abusive towards her, threatened to harm her if she did not acquire it for him. Killian noted that Vogel never made that same allegation against her ex-husband, though, in regards to the amphetamine. Never were any allegations of domestic abuse made to law enforcement either, Killian noted. In the pre-sentence investigation report, Vogel blamed her ex-husband for her current legal troubles, saying, "This is all his fault." Killian also pointed out that Vogel, as a pharmacist with 6 years of schooling, in addition to her several years of professional experience, was fully aware of the regulations for the proper storage, disposal, and inventory of medications, yet chose to ignore those rules anyway. Vogel did so, knowing the potential legal consequences and the potential threat of serious harms to others if those drugs would have found their way into the community and an overdose occurred. While Vogel claimed the medications in her home were all expired, Killian noted that expired inventory does not become less dangerous. Meanwhile, Killian acknowledged that there is no evidence to indicate that Vogel illegally sold the drugs for her financial gain. In arguing for a probation term instead of prison, Martinicus likewise pointed out that the drugs were never illegally distributed in the community or inappropriately administered to her children either, as Vogel's ex-husband had reportedly claimed to the DEA. Martinicus also noted that Osgood, in her psychological evaluation of Vogel, indicated that Vogel does not appear to present a risk of harm to the public or her children. Martinicus also pointed out that Vogel was indeed remorseful for her crime, as she stated in the pre-sentence investigation report that she feels the worst kind of guilt in the world. At the same time, Martinicus said Vogel acted under the provocation from her ex-husband, who turned over the expired medication to the DEA after divorce proceedings were initiated as a way to get an advantage in the divorce. It worked, Martinicus admitted. Only later did an administrative law judge of the Illinois Department of Children and Family Services rule in Vogel's favor, clearing her of the allegations made by her ex-husband. Martinicus also mentioned Vogel's lack of criminal history and noted that she has already been punished professionally by losing her pharmacist's license. There's no reason to believe that she's going to commit another crime, either with drugs or anything else, Martinicus told Fitton. Martinicus also pointed out that Vogel's children, with whom she has a close, loving bond, would be negatively affected by her absence if she is sent to prison. A prison term would not help her deal with her depression, anxiety, and post-traumatic stress disorder, Martinicus said. In sentencing Vogel, Fitton acknowledged Vogel's lack of criminal history, but noted that she abused her position of trust and authority and that her reckless acts put people in jeopardy of harm. Vogel purchased Doug's Compounding Pharmacy on Market Street in Paxton in 2019 from its longtime former owner and pharmacist Doug Higgins, who established the business in 1997. The pharmacy suddenly shut down in winter of 2022-23, not long after a foreclosure complaint was filed against Vogel by the Arkansas-based First Financial Bank, which secured judgment in its favor in 2023. According to the foreclosure complaint, Vogel defaulted on a $1,750,000 mortgage she secured to acquire the pharmacy. Now we'll turn to the obituaries in the Ford County Chronicle for Wednesday, July 29th. Mary L. Bricky, Gibson City. Mary L. Bricky, 93 of Gibson City, died Monday, July 20th, at the Villas of Hollybrook in Gibson City. Gwendolyn Erbright, Pontiac. Gwendolyn Janice Erbright, 91, mother of a Piper City resident, died at 6:38 a.m. Saturday, July 18th, at St. James Hospital in Pontiac. A celebration of her life will be at 3 p.m. Saturday, September 1st, at the First Baptist Church in Fairbury. Memorial contributions may be made to Samaritan's Purse Ministries and St. Jude's Children's Research Hospital. Sidney Frank Reuter, Gilman. Sidney Lynn Frank Reuter, 11, of Gilman, died Monday, July 20th, at her home. Funeral arrangements were unavailable at the time of publication. Richard W. Hurd, Rantoul. Richard W. Rick Hurd, 75, of Rantoul, died Tuesday, July 21st, at his home. Funeral services were held Tuesday, July 28th, at the Cox Knapp Funeral Home in Paxton. Memorials may be made to his family. Marion Iserman, Gibson City. Marion Lou Fasking Iserman, 94, of Mesa, Arizona, formerly of Gibson City, died Thursday, July 16th, surrounded by her family. Services will be at 11 a.m. Saturday, August 1st, at the Northridge Ward of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints in Mesa, Arizona. There will also be a service at 10 a.m. Saturday, August 29th, at the United Methodist Church in Gibson City, with a luncheon following. Prior to the Gibson City Church service will be a family graveside service at 9:30. She will be laid to rest next to her parents and siblings at Drummer Township Cemetery in Gibson City. Greta E. Simonson, Tolono. Greta Ellen Simonson, 76, of Fort Myers, Florida, formerly of Gibson City in the Champaign area, died Saturday, July 18th at Memory Haven in Tolono. Funeral services were held Monday, July 27th at St. Matthew's Catholic Church in Champaign. Memorial contributions may be made to Memory Haven of Tolono. Bert Hagen, Gibson City. Bert Hagen, 61, of Gibson City, died at his home on Thursday, July 23rd. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at the time of publication. Turning back to the front page, we have from the PBL School District, District's new mission statement approved. Superintendent, this will start us off on the proper foot. Get us to focus on the future. Paxton. The Paxton-Buckley Lotus School Board voted unanimously to approve a revised mission statement for the school district during its monthly meeting on Wednesday, July 22nd. Superintendent Eric Bohm said he worked with a group of about 16 staff members to revise the mission statement before his official start at the helm at PBL on July 1st. Bohm said in June that the goal was to make it more concise, focusing on specific pillars to be used as models when we look at what we want our graduates to exemplify. The motto, the theme for this year, is to focus on the future, Bohm said Wednesday, and I think that setting a new mission statement for the district will start us off on the proper foot and get us to focus on the future. Before the board's 5-0 vote of approval, Bohm read the new mission statement. We are committed to preparing every student for responsible citizenship and lifelong success by cultivating strong character, critical thinking, clear communication, and collaboration within a safe, high-expectation learning environment where daily attendance and active participation are supported by family and community partners. The old mission statement, still posted Thursday on the school district's website, read, "It is the mission of the Paxton Buckley Lota Community Unit School Number 10, School District Number 10, to prepare each student to be a successful citizen as demonstrated through strong character, responsible actions, and a passion for lifelong learning. PBL students will be empowered with the skills that allow them to read with comprehension, communicate clearly, utilize technology, think critically, work effectively with others, and use information to solve problems. PBL is committed to a systematic approach of support and intervention to assist each individual in reaching his or her full potential. We are dedicated to providing a safe environment while fostering a climate of high expectations for our students, staff, and the communities we serve." Bohm, who had been principal of Pontiac Township High School since 2012, replaced John Kilgore, who served as PBL's interim superintendent since last fall after the resignation of Travis Dooley the previous June. Five board members were present Wednesday night: Don Bachtold, Grant Kleinstreiber, Brittany Malding, Josh Mullins, and Jason Rust. Absent was board member Christine Johnson. A seventh board seat remains unfilled after being vacated by former board vice president Craig Lotion at the end of May. The board voted to accept Lotion's resignation in June, and the appointment of a new board member was initially listed on the agenda for this month's meeting, but was removed. And finally on the front page, watchdogs sue schools and villages in Ford County, Paxton. The Missouri-based Coalition Opposing Governmental Secrecy and an affiliated watchdog group based in that same state are suing four public school districts and two villages in Ford County Circuit Court over their alleged noncompliance with the Illinois Freedom of Information Act. A 12-count lawsuit was filed Tuesday, July 21st, by attorney Edward "Coach" Winehouse on behalf of the nonprofit COGS and one of its member organizations, Judiciocracy LLC, both of which qualify by law as news media, according to the civil complaint. Named as defendants are the Gibson City Melvin Sibley, Hoopston Area, Prairie Central, and Tri Point School Districts, whose boundaries include portions of Ford County, and the Ford County villages of Kempton and Melvin. The lawsuit asked the courts to find that the six defendants intentionally violated the Freedom of Information Act by improperly withholding records requested. It asked the court to force their compliance with the law and immediately disclose full and complete copies of all the records, in addition to awarding plaintiffs civil penalties from $2,500 to $5,000 per violation of the law, along with reasonable attorney fees and costs. Judiciocracy, which, according to the lawsuit, provides comprehensive and accurate news coverage of misconduct of the justice system, sent the same FOIA request to all six defendants on January 14th as part of the COG's multi-year statewide investigation in how the public entities hire, manage, and pay legal professionals. Requested from each public entity were copies of all bills from external attorneys or law firms for all of 2024 through July 18, 2025, plus all engagement agreements with attorneys or law firms for any of those bills. In the case of five of the defendants, the GCMS, Hoopston Area, and Prairie Central School Districts, and both villages, their responses did not include complete copies of the requested documents, as only a summary of bills paid was provided rather than the actual bills themselves, and the identities of attorneys were withheld, the lawsuit said. A hearing on the lawsuit has not yet been set, according to court records. And that's all the time we have for today's reading of the Ford County Chronicle. This is Tom Scott. I look forward to reading with you again very soon.